Live.
Live from
Welcome to New York.
This is
the Just End the Suffering Podcast.
For the win.
Got it! Oh! He broke his ankle!
Follow me to freedom!
Y'all ready for this?
Here's your host, Mike Phillips.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to today's episode of the Just End the Suffering Podcast. Here's New York Sports Talk and Long Suffering Fam. Your host, Mike Phillips. Back for another fun episode here at the podcast. We're going to recap the NFL draft. A lot of interesting stuff happened here, and we'll be joined in just a minute by Daryl Slater. Covers the Giants with the Star Ledger. We're going to recap the top of the draft, the crazy quarterback moves, what the Giants did, what the Jets did. Let's talk all that with Daryl in just a bit. Also, make sure you're locking in the podcast week's two-minute drill. And I'll tell you why it was so important the Rangers closed out the Washington Capitals in four games. It's nothing they usually do and could make big dividends for them down the line. I'll talk about why at the end of the podcast. Like you hear the Just on the Suffering podcast, feel free to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon, all usual suspects. Simply search for Just End the Suffering or favorite podcast platforms. You can find our episodes there. Feel free to your feedback and starring as well, helping the podcast even better going forward. Check out the YouTube page, Mike Phillips on YouTube. Video version of this conversation with Daryl Slater is up on YouTube. Again, Mike Phillips on YouTube. Without any further ado, let's get to our opening tip. We're going to give you the headlines on the NFL draft in round one. That's going to come up here right after this.
Y'all ready for this?
The opening tip.
And here we go.
All right, opening tip time. NFL draft, certainly interesting affair as always. We saw this year how crazy teams willing to go to build up an offense, particularly the quarterback. We had five quarterbacks go inside the top 10, a new record for the position, six in the top 12. The next quarterback off the board, Spencer Rattler, did not go until the pick fifth round, but he picked 150 of the Saints. Wild thing about that, but certainly some reaches in here. 1, 2, 3 went as he expected in the most mocks. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May went 1, 2, 3 to Chicago, Washington, New England. The Pats reportedly had heavy interest in the third pick. The Giants reportedly offered their first and second round picks this year and a first next year, going from 6 to 3, presumably after Drake May. New England opts to stay put and hopefully secure their quarterback future in the post-Tom Brady world. They're still looking for that answer after Mac Jones was not it. 4 and 5 also went according to most mock plans here. The Cardinals grabbed Marvin Harrison Jr. to be their top receiver. The Chargers took Joe Alt to protect Justin Herbert. Giants next up at 6. They had a choice in taking J.H. McCarthy to QB4 on the board, be their new franchise quarterback replace Daniel Jones, or grab a top receiver. They went receiver. They took LSU's Malik Nabers, a home run threat to the offense that severely needed speed. Pierce McCarthy buzz was just a smokescreen. I like this choice of the Giants. I know it's a lot of Giant fans weren't happy to not take a quarterback. I think outside of those top three, teams were reaching for quarterbacks to fill their holes. I think J.J. McCarthy would have been Daniel Jones 2.0 here. Whereas he's good, not great, limits your ceiling as a team. You grab the elite receiver now. That almost always pays dividends at the top of the draft. Think about Ja'Marr Chase coming out of LSU, what he's done for the Bengals. Jaylen Waddle in Miami. Garrett Wilson for the Jets. You get Nabers here, and he's hits on his potential. Gives you a chance to build a foundation for either Daniel Jones to go another level or another quarterback in the future to have a number one receiver in-house. Other QB choices in the draft were a bit strange, particularly Atlanta taking Michael Penix Jr. at number 8 after they paid Kirk Cousins $180 million in the offseason. Listen, I know Kirk Cousins is coming off an Achilles tear, but there is no reason to waste a top 10 pick on a guy who'll be 28 when Cousins' contract expires. And if everything goes well, he's not playing. I know GM Terry Fontenot said, we're fine, he doesn't play for 4 or 5 years. That's not how it works. Atlanta could have had their pick of defensive players on the board, and believe me, their defense needs a lot of help. That's a much bigger need than getting a quarterback who may not play for the entirety of his rookie contract. They overreacted to the movement on the board. They snagged a quarterback, who also is a medical question, by the way. He's had a lot of leg injuries, Michael Penix. He's not going to play for years if everything goes according to plan. The Vikings moved up a pick to get J.J. McCarthy. They swapped a 5 of the Jets, gave them a 4 to move up the 1 slot to get J.J. McCarthy. Gives us a long-term plan after Kirk Cousins left. Low-cost maneuver for the Vikings. They did try and get a second first-round pick to try and go all the way up for Drake May. Obviously, they were rebuffed by New England. But they have to get that second first-rounder here. They have Sam Darnold around to basically play the buffer to let McCarthy learn the NFL style. But having McCarthy there with a offensive-minded coach with some weapons, not a bad call there. Denver Bo Nix at 12. That's very strange. This is a guy with a second-round grade. Sean Payton clearly liked Nick's intelligence. We heard all about how he digested the whole playbook, basically threw stuff back at them in hours of meeting them. That'll help. This is a reach. I felt like Denver was just basically telegraphing the world. We're going quarterback no matter what. Is there a team-building strategy involved having a rookie quarterback contract where they deal with the calf off and moving on from Russell Wilson before that extension kicked in? That basically boxed them in here, take Bo Nix. That kind of inflexibility feels like a mistake with all the needs they have. And forcing a quarterback doesn't work. Simple as that. Last thing you want to talk to you is how the Jets did in round one. They tried to have a few times with Rome Odunze. They were a buff, and they tried to go to 8. They tried to go to 7 with Tennessee. They were turned down. Instead of taking Brock Bowers, which felt like a luxury pick at tight end, they went with a strong need pick in left tackle Olu Fashanu from Penn State. I know there are a lot of people online criticizing this pick, saying, oh, he's not going to play right now in a win-now situation. The Jets need everything to win for 2024. But given the way the Jets built their line, is very smart. Tyron Smith has not played a full year since 2015. Morgan Moses, 33, coming off of offseason pec surgery. Neither guy is under contract beyond this year. If one of them goes down here and you take Brock Bowers, either Carter Warren, Max Mitchell, or TBA veteran is your backup tackle. That's not what you want to be doing in a win-now season yet, where you have to protect Aaron Rodgers. Fashanu is a great insurance policy for 2023. You know he's going to end up playing here. He's going to learn from future Hall of Famer in Tyron Smith. Sets you up nice for 2024 when Smith ends up going his merry way, and you have a 4-0 left tackle on the contract. That's great for salary cap flexibility because the Jets have to worry about, soon enough, the clock is going to start ticking on those contract extensions to the 2022 class. That's the Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, Jermaine Johnson quartet. Having a cheap left tackle on a rookie-scale deal for another 4 years gives you greater flexibility to get those contracts done. The tight end, not so much. I think it made a lot of sense. We'll talk more about the draft in just a second with Daryl Slater right after this. All right, we are back here on the podcast. We are recapping the 2024 NFL draft, a very busy one for both the locals and the league as a whole. Join me today to break down the big headlines for the Jets, the Giants, and league-wide. Great NFL writer for the Star-Ledger, Daryl Slater, is here. Daryl, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on here. And obviously, it was a really crazy sort of first round with all sorts of quarterback rushes here and a lot of like offensive players picked high. What did you think about how this draft played out on starting on Thursday night?
That's not how it played out. The Giants did not trade up. They tried to trade up to 3 for Drake May, but the Patriots took him. And I think that makes sense for the Patriots. Look, their owner's not getting any younger. He wants another Super Bowl. Go get your franchise quarterback, or what you think is. So they did do that. Arizona did not trade down. They made the, I think, smart move, take the best receiver available there for Kyler Murray. So no trade-up for J.J. McCarthy. And then the Giants pass on McCarthy, which I think a lot of people saw coming. I think the top of the board, the draft, kind of unfolded in a chalky way that you would have expected if there were no trades. And then, of course, things moved on from there. But, just for the Jets' perspective, getting in much-needed protection up front. And, this is sort of how these teams are going to be rolling forward in 2024.
Yeah, before we get to the locals here, real quick, I want your opinion on the quarterback situation here, especially after the top three played out, where the Falcons sort of stunned the world by taking Michael Penix number 8. Yep. You had the Vikings trade up one slot with the Jets to get McCarthy at 10. And then the Broncos, fearing missing out on all the quarterbacks, grabbed Bo Nix at 12. That felt like the last three sort of felt like, oh my God, this is the league panicking to, like, we need to make sure we get quarterbacks and rookie contracts. Like, that was sort of crazy how that played out.
Well, I mean, okay, so you go one by one. Obviously, the Penix thing, a total stunner, okay? Like, just a complete stunner. The stunner of all stunners there at 8. And at that point, you know, I was still in the Giants media room writing, and then you don't hear about it until a couple minutes later. So the immediacy of the news kind of was lost on me. Just because I had my head in Giants stuff. But yeah, I mean, you look up and you're like, wow, 8 for Penix, and seems high, obviously, in a vacuum. And certainly the Falcons, my goodness, what an, it's an insane pick, no matter how you slice it. I'm not alone in that opinion, obviously. And then I don't think it's a surprise necessarily that the Vikings took a quarterback. They trade up one spot, but, McCarthy was their backup plan to May, and, they need a quarterback. I mean, they were even more desperate for a quarterback. Their incumbent is worse than Daniel Jones. I mean, Sam Darnold's terrible. They couldn't go forward with him. So, who knows what McCarthy's going to be, but everyone was saying Sam Darnold was going to be great when he came out. It didn't happen. So, and then Sean Payton, total I mean, total panic job. I mean, he went and, you know, put every signal out there that they were going to get a quarterback. They obviously didn't have anybody either, just like the Vikings. But, you know, Peyton's probably under pressure to kind of do something to justify that ridiculous contract that he got and show that he can actually do something with somebody other than Drew Brees. And then he's not an overrated coach. But so I think that, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, he wanted his own quarterback, and they went and got it in Bo Nix. And I guess we'll see. I mean, you say we'll see about every draft pick, but I don't think people consider Bo Nix like overall the 12th best prospect in the draft. So I mean, we'll see what Peyton does with him.
Yeah, it's very funny. I think a comp to the 2011 NFL draft where the last time Corus on 8, 10, and 12 was Blaine Gabbert, Jake Locker, and Christian Ponders. That could be a bad one for those three teams.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, there's just a laundry list of these quarterbacks who don't work out. I mean, more often than not, it doesn't work out.
Yeah, that's for sure here. And let's get to the Giants, who you're tapped in with here as you cover them extensively. So we heard a lot of rumors on draft night. They were trying to get up to 3 with New England to try and get presumably a quarterback. I know Adam Schefter said today that they were looking at Joe Alt, but I don't know. Not sure if I buy that here. But the rumor was they're willing to give up their second round pick this year and one next year, get up to 3. And New England said no. They wanted to stay put and take their guy. So was that real, or is that just like smoke from the Giants?
That was real. I mean, yeah, they were not going to trade up number 3 for Joe Alt. What? That's insane. That's so dumb. That come on. Like, the number 3 move was to get Drake May. I mean, they wanted Drake May. They wanted Drake May to replace Daniel Jones. Okay, they wanted to fire Daniel Jones, basically, is what his boys boils down to. Okay, they wanted to divorce him. I mean, and he's still on the team. And he's their starting quarterback, which makes it even more fascinating now rolling forward. It was clearly, I'm kind of like making light of it, but it made sense, right? It made sense. First of all, it makes sense to be bold at quarterback because the payoff is so big. That missing on a quarterback versus the payoff is much bigger. It's not a 50-50 proposition. So it makes sense to be bold, offering your first and a second. Okay, I think that made sense. The Patriots also did something that made sense, and they took Drake May. And I mentioned it earlier. They got an owner who is, you know, not getting any younger, and he wants to win another Super Bowl. I totally get it. The Giants hurt themselves because they didn't lose enough last year. They were 2-8. They closed 4-3. The Tommy DeVito stuff basically killed their chances of getting Drake May, period. Like, so now there were other factors. I mean, Wake Martindale's defense played pretty well, but you think of outlier things, right? You'd expect a defense to play well. Wake Martindale's defense to play well against a bad Patriots offense. You don't think that Tommy DeVito is going to give you steady play, which he did. Anyway, so that's, everyone knows that's where the Giants were desperate to move up, but only for one player. And I think that approach makes sense. A Drake May or nothing, that was one being their approach. May or nobody at all. Okay. And I think that a quarterback in the NFL is obviously an all or nothing proposition. Either you have a guy or you don't. And why go get a guy who you think ceiling is mediocre? That doesn't make sense. So I can totally understand the logic there with either if they weren't going to get May, they were just going to roll forward with Jones. I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, we'll see what history says about passing on McCarthy, Penix, Nix. I think more so McCarthy, right, because he was a guy that could be a possibility at 6. So, that's where things fell for the Giants. They were very aggressive in trying to trade up to 3 for Drake May, but that was where they drew the line. And they were committed to him as their guy. And now, you know, they understood that it was possible they weren't going to get him. I mean, it was leaking out all day that the Patriots were staying, and they did stay. And it makes sense for the Patriots.
Yeah, it does too. And I think I'm in lockstep with you on the Giants situation as well here, where if you don't think a quarterback is great, don't waste a pick on. I feel like that's sort of what happened with them with Daniel Jones in the first place. And taking Malik Nabers at 6 felt like a home run pick because this is an offense that needs speed, needs playmakers. And Malik Nabers feels like to be a perfect fit for Daniel Jones now, whoever's a quarterback in 2025. So this is a fantastic choice for the Giants.
I like it. I think it's you cannot fault them for that pick. Okay, maybe he doesn't work out, and maybe McCarthy does, and I think it would have to be extreme where Malik Nabers is not good and McCarthy is great. I think it makes sense from a perspective of that was your need. Now, obviously, there's a question of like who's the quarterback going to be, but Malik Nabers is going to be on the team for more than one season, right? So like, it's not like 1 year if Daniel Jones stinks, it's going to ruin Malik Nabers' career. It's going to wind up being a dumb pick. They could just take a quarterback next year, maybe sign Dak Prescott. But I think there's a lot to like about Malik Nabers and his production in the SEC. We'll see on some of the pre-draft stuff about him being hard to coach and all that stuff. You know, a lot of these receivers have big personalities in terms of being super ultra competitive, and that's what you really want, and that's what everyone said about him. Super, super competitive kid, and obviously a ton of talent, and they needed a legit receiver. And now, like, I know we went into last year, like, no more excuses for Daniel Jones. Okay, now, obviously, like, no more excuses, because he's going to get cut at the end of this year. If he's anything other than very good, he's gone. So that's where they're at right now. I think that they were never going to fill all their needs, which is never going to happen. They had to make a choice at six, right? Either a quarterback, or then you got to figure out a receiver in round two, right? So anyway, that's what they wound up doing, and I think that the pick makes sense given their logic behind the quarterback all or nothing on May.
Yeah, plus, like, receivers in the top 10, and generally the last few years have worked out pretty well. We saw it with the Jets at Garrett Wilson, Jamar Chase, yeah. Jalen Waddle. Like, your odds of hitting on a receiver this high are pretty good.
Yeah, and he's the second receiver off the board, and some people think he might have been the best receiver in a very good receiver draft class. I mean, this kid is, I know college career stats can be misleading because it all depends on how much you play and how many years you play. You can have compilers and all that, but he leaves LSU as their all-time leader in catches and yards, and I looked this up. LSU has had 10 receivers all-time drafted in the first round, 7 others in the second round. You know, Jarvis Landry, his second-round pick. 17 receivers taken in the first two rounds. I mean, this is a great receiver school. Odell Beckham, obviously, didn't wind up being what we all thought he'd be. But obviously, he had some pretty good NFL seasons. Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, most recently. And so those are the shoes he stepped into. Malik Nabers did at LSU, and those are the guys he's going to try to follow in the NFL.
Yeah, that's for sure. Let's go get the rest of the Giant class here. How do you think they did with the rest of their picks?
Had to get a safety because they let McKinney walk. It would be very unfair to expect Tyler Newbin to play as well as this year as McKinney did last year. But Joe Shane obviously does not value the position in terms of investing a lot of money in it. And so they were always going to draft a safety. And so I think a safety in round two makes sense. Look, McKinney was the second round pick. They got 4 years of very cost-effective strong play from him. They'd love to get that from Newbin, right? So if you talk about how much money you're putting into a position, I'm going to have to refresh my memory on their picks here. Maybe helpful if you kind of run them down for me, because I'm thinking about a bunch of things. Where did they go from there after the Newbin pick? Was that go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and pull that up here on the Giant. I have a Giant board here of their picks. So
it's been a long weekend.
Yeah, I got Drew Phillips in the third round. Theo
Johnson. Okay, here we go. So we'll go Drew Phillips, right? Andrew Phillips from Kentucky. Yeah. He's a guy who, and once I hear the names, I could just get in the rounds. He can play in the slot. He can play outside. He played, I think, about 30% of his stuff in the slot. Now, right now, they view him as a slot guy. We'll see how that shakes out. And to me, that means they're considering taking Cordell Flott, moving him from the slot. He's their incumbent slot starter, and putting him outside. They have a big hole at the outside cornerback spot opposite Deontay Banks. Super young secondary right now. I mean, Deontay Banks in year two, coming off an uneven rookie year, he's going to have to be their, like, legit number one corner and lead this secondary. Because other than Banks, opposite him, you either have Flott as the other outside corner, because Adoree Jackson's gone, or Nick McCloud, who's, you know, has done some okay things, right? Jason Pinnock returns to safety. It's not like he's a proven long-term player. And then Newbin is the other safety. And then your slot guy is either going to be Flott, if you put McCloud outside, or it could be Drew Phillips. I mean, so there's a lot of question marks about this secondary, but Phillips does give him some versatility as the slot, and they like that. Fourth round, the tight end.
Theo Johnson. I feel like he's going to be a good hedge on Waller.
Yep, Theo Johnson from Penn State. He's a big dude. He's 6'6", 259. All you had to do is mention the name, and I can roll on that. Obviously, the storyline there is super obvious. I mean, Waller, they had to proceed as though he was not going to be back. They did not take big swings in free agency at the position. Chris Manhertz and Jack Soule. I mean, come on. Like, who? And most people are going to say, who are those guys, right? So this is the second time in – well, this is the third straight offseason they've invested a significant asset in the tight end. Daniel Bellinger, fourth-round pick, significant-ish, 2022. He hasn't been great. Then they trade a third-rounder to Waller for Waller. The trade was a disaster. I mean, it's been a complete disaster. And now they get some insurance, and assuming he won't be back, in another fourth-round pick. So they've taken a bunch of swings at tight end. Let's see if it works out. And then if you just want to move down the list here, and the next, oh, I got the list in front of me here now. Tyrone Tracy in round five. Of course, they did have 39 in the second round, traded to Brian Burns. I mean, they better hope to the heavens that this kid, Brian Burns, is elite. I mean, that trade and that contract just puts the pressure so high on him to produce in a way that he is not at any point in his career. So I think there's that. Obviously, in the fifth round, they were at 151. They actually traded that to Carolina for Burns. And they moved down to 166 via the trade. So a little bit lower in the fifth round, they get Tyrone Tracy, a running back from Purdue, give him some depth there. Devin Singletary, the takeaway there, Devin Singletary is still the number one back. And then Tyrone Tracy and Eric Gray behind him. I mean, geez. Boy, I tell you what, if they lose, with Saquon Barkley gone to the Eagles, if Barkley has a monster year, especially against the Giants, boy, what egg on face that'll be. And John Merrill will be furious. I have no doubt about it. If that, he said he was sick about losing Barkley. How sick is he going to be if Barkley walks all over him and this giant offense doesn't have much to offer yet again? But we'll see. That's a bunch of ifs there. I think it's fair to assume Barkley's going to have a pretty productive year. We'll see if the giant offense is better, but the running back position, obviously not a heavily invested in position. Another spot where Joe Shane doesn't want to throw a lot of money at. We'll see how that works out. And then in the sixth round, the Giants wrap it up because they traded their seventh to Arizona for Isaiah Simmons last year. So the sixth round pick is Darius Masao, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, the kid from LSU, or UCLA rather, linebacker. Inside linebacker depth there, probably going to be some special teams value. But yeah, in terms of the highlights of the draft, I mean, they get a versatile corner. They get Darren Waller insurance. They get a new safety, who's definitely a day one starter for sure. And then they get their first number one receiver, true number one receiver of the Daniel Jones era.
It's really a good haul for them. Go to the Jets, I mean, here. Obviously, we heard a lot that they were trying to trade up to get Rome Odunze. Nobody wanted to trade with them. They were sitting there at 10. They pick up a 4 from the Vikings to go back a pick and take Olufoshano. So the Brock Bowers up was a smokescreen, probably the right call for them as an organization here. The Rashano pick I like a lot in the Jet perspective because obviously they did a lot of work on the line, but Tyre Smith hasn't played a full season since 2015. Morgan Moses coming off a pec surgery in the offseason here. And Rashano is a guy who can obviously fill in if one of them gets hurt, and you figure next year they're penciling him in to be the star at left tackle.
Odunze goes obviously a pick before they would have picked, 9 to the Bears. Man, they could have used another receiver. They better hope Mike Williams can stay healthy. And then speaking of hoping guys can stay healthy, the two tackles, obviously Morgan Moses and Tyron Smith, that's the fingers crossed thing they were doing too. But Fashanu, like you said, gives them a guy who can be a safety net there. He's not necessarily going to be, or he's not going to be a week one starter, but what are the odds that Moses and Tyron Smith both play all 17 games? I would give it like a 2% chance. So Fashanu is going to be, he's going to start games this year, I bet. Then they didn't have a second round pick because of the Rodgers trade. Okay. No one's ever going to remember that if he leads them to whatever. I think that the bar is super high for that trade, man. I tell you, they need to make the Super Bowl. I think they need to make the Super Bowl for that trade to work out. Okay, maybe you can take some solace in losing in the AFC Championship game. But anyway, so they no second round pick. And then Malachi Corley, the slot receiver from Western Kentucky in round three, who is super productive guy. They really, really liked him. And I think that's the guy who's going to be really important immediately. I mean, of all the guys they picked, he will have the most impact immediately. Braylon Allen, a running back from Wisconsin in round four. They traded back a bunch. And then
the Jordan Travis one, I think I'm fascinated by because obviously they've
Okay, and then around it, some of these names I haven't even looked at. Isaiah Davis, a running back, was helping put a team in round five. Okay, some running back depth. I'll go back to Travis. And then they pick a safety from Alabama, Jalen Keough, Mr. Relevant in round seven. The kid from the Quantez Stiggers kid from the cornerback in the fifth round he's the one who didn't go to college. They picked him out of the CFL. Interesting for that, but it's not like he's going to be an tackle. Okay, so then flipping back to their first of three fifth-round picks at 171, Jordan Travis, the quarterback from Florida State, who was mostly known for being the reason, that, through no fault of his own, that Florida State got screwed out of the college football playoff because of his injury, poor kid, on multiple fronts. And yes, he is now, I guess, their backup quarterback, right? I mean, like,
I figure he looks more like a redshirt because they have Tyrod Taylor there too. So you figure?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Yeah. A total brain fart there.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're backup quarterback of the future. So Tyrod Taylor is a guy who's, you know, his NFL career might be over after this year. Obviously, he's had a really solid career and has been a backup. But Taylor does give them a big safety net. But what Jordan Travis gives them is an intriguing developmental piece. You mentioned redshirt. I don't know if he's the heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers, but at the very least, he could be the heir apparent to Tyrod Taylor. Right? I mean, so there's no reason to think that. You draft the quarterback in the fifth round, the odds are he's not going to be a long-term starter for you. That's just the reality of it. Then again, I do believe, and I will check this, Tyrod Taylor was a fifth-round pick. So he's had a fruitful career in terms of he's made a ton of money. He was a six-round pick, actually, which a very productive college quarterback, Tyrod Taylor, just like Jordan Travis. And so, hey, if he has a career like that, I think he'd be very happy because Tyrod Taylor's made himself a heck of a lot of money. He started, has been successful as a starter, and is still kicking around as a backup at going to be 35 when the season starts. So I'm sure Jordan Travis would sign for that in a heartbeat. And it's an intriguing pick. I gather you think the same.
Yeah, I think it makes sense for them to sort of invest in, see if they can catch a little lightning in a bottle with him. I think the highlight of this draft on them is going to be Fashanu, because as you mentioned before here, like the odds of both Moses and Smith playing all 17 games are very, very slim. And I think if you're the Jets, you do not want to be in a position where either Carter Warren or some veteran you saw off the street is the guy you're throwing in there if one of them gets hurt to protect Aaron Rodgers.
Bingo. You got it. Do you talk about insurance? Like, Tyrod Taylor's had injuries and Rodgers coming off the ACL. Their season's done if Rodgers gets hurt. And then, so who cares if Tyrod Taylor gets hurt and they have to play Jordan Travis? That is not an insurance one. He's certainly a guy to know in terms of who they could play at the position in the future, but not this year as a safety net. So he's maybe a safety net for the future in terms of a backup. But Fashanu, I think that's the takeaway. But Malachi Corley is a really important slot piece for them because we had talked, okay, maybe they wanted to trade up for Dunze to try to take some pressure off of Garrett Wilson. And now they're fingers crossed that, of course, an outside receiver that Mike Williams can stay healthy, but maybe Corley is a kid who can also take a little heat off Garrett Wilson. Physical dude, 5'11", 210. So a little bit of a shorter receiver, but got some bulk to him. He's a fighter, you know? And so I think it was all about offense. This is a team that clearly was in really good shape on defense. I mean, they picked all their picks for offense except for the last two. So depth at running back, the quarterback, young quarterback who could develop. And then we, you know, Fashanu and Corley. So everyone knew their defense in really good shape. They had to address the offense and they did. I think the approach is right. We'll see if the picks are right.
Yeah.
They need to deliver though. I mean, this is a win now team. So I understand that, you know, there may not be immediate sure thing value in Fashanu, but there is immediate value if one of your tackles gets hurt. So they need Corley to play well immediately. That's the pressure point to me of this draft. Will Corley, the third round receiver, give them something immediately? It's got to happen because this is a 1 year team right now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, anytime you can draft a guy whose nickname is the Yak King, that's somebody I think you're very interested in.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, Daryl, thanks for all the time. Really appreciate it. People will follow your coverage of the NFL and follow you on social media. How can they do that?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Just Daryl Slater, DarylSlater on Twitter. And then we're at nj.com/Giants. And then our Jets writer, Andy Vasquez, does a really good job at nj.com/Jets covering all things Jets. So I appreciate you having me as always.
Yeah, thanks for all the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
The 2-Minute Drill.
All right, 2-Minute Drill time. We have one New York team officially moving on to the postseason. President's Trophy winning New York Rangers complete the 4-game sweep of the Washington Capitals, advance to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. No one should be shocked the Rangers advanced. They're the best team in hockey this season. Washington won a slow-speed bumper car chase to get the second wild card in the East with a -37 goal differential in the regular season, the worst in years for an NHL playoff team. We'll get deeper into the Rangers later this week. Christopher Russo is coming back on for a preview of the second round when the matchup is set. The important number here is 4. That's the number of games the Rangers need to finish off Washington, a.k.a. the bare minimum. Playoff hockey is no joke, and very physically taxing. The best teams take care of business quickly to get some rest between these rounds. Any Rangers fan worth their salt knows that the Rangers, when they were going on these playoff runs in the early and mid-2010s, through the end of that perennial contender period that ended with the letter, they could not close off teams quick enough. They had a lot of seven-game series in these first rounds. A lot of tired legs in the later rounds rolled around against the better teams, and that really hurt them. Getting through Washington in four is fantastic for the Rangers. They do not need to burn more energy than necessary to get to the wars that are coming. Barring something very strange, Carolina will be waiting the second round, probably on Saturday with the first game. Boston or Florida, it looks like they're going to be the two teams on the other side of the bracket. They get through Carolina, one of them's waiting in the conference finals. Those series are going to be wars. There was no reason to let the Capitals hang around any longer than they needed to. Rangers took care of their business quickly. That could pay major dividends for them down the line, so we'll keep an eye on the Rangers going forward. With that, I want to end the podcast for right now. I want to thank Daryl Slater for coming on here, breaking down the NFL draft. Always fun chatting with Daryl. Work and stuff like this podcast, including my thoughts on whether or not Zach Wilson is the biggest draft bust in New York sports history. Check out the blog over at justonthesuffering.wordpress.com. Check out the Sky Guys podcast as well. The Bad Batch is winding down. Nick Fred and I did our recap of this penultimate episode last week. That's in the podcast feed now. The finale is Wednesday. We're going to have a pod coming on that late Wednesday night, so make sure you're subscribed if you want the Star Wars content, same podcast, Blinds Barnes, on top of the show. Because follow me on social media, mphillips331. That's M-P-H-I-L-I-P-S 331. Our next episode will be coming up here a little quicker here. Chris Russo will be here to talk about the Rangers second rounder. That will be out soon. Room and Nick coverage, the Knicks advance as well, and more. So we have a better week than Phoenix Suns fans.
This has been the Just End the Suffering podcast.
I'm out.